Bismillah ir-Rahman ir-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. So this is, welcome everyone. This is our third podcast and a very vital subject actually today that is not known well enough generally in Sufi circles. Okay, I titled the subject Dimensions of Knowledge. That is, what do you need to know to be a complete seeker of truth? Now, we have a lot of, the Arabic word is that's used is kamal. We know that there's, in Sufi literature, there's insan al-kamil, the complete person. But the complete person from ancient times is not the same as the complete person from modern times. So there are areas of knowledge that we really need to know, and I encourage people who want to follow the Sufi way to learn about these areas of knowledge, and we'll go through them one by one. Okay. This is not the kind of knowledge. There is also, must be said, some practical areas of knowledge that are always good to know. In the modern days, we need some technology. This is a practical, technical issue. We should know how to cook, how to take care of a house, how to fix simple things in our house, in our car. All of these are, maybe to speak languages, all of these are practical issues, except for Arabic, that's a spiritual issue. But all of these are practical issues, but we're not talking about the practical knowledge. We're talking about the deeper inner knowledge. Okay. So for those of you who have read some of my writings, I often talk about the bio-psycho-socio-spiritual model. Okay, and that sounds like a mouthful, but actually it's quite simple. And in today's talk, we're going to go backwards and start with the spiritual knowledge, which would be category 4, if you want. For us, it's category 1, the most important. Now, the spiritual knowledge itself has a few dimensions. One, Muslims know about the Sharia, the outward law, so or extended, it could be all the ulum, all the sciences of ilm, the Islamic sciences, whether it's fiqh, usul al-fiqh, tajweed, sirah, hadith, many different areas of Islamic sciences. Okay, that is important for one to know. If one's following another religion, then one has to learn the theology and the rituals and the practice of that religion. We're following Islam in our way. But besides this, and most Muslims are conversant with those areas of knowledge, they have a fair amount, not always a very extensive amount, a fair amount of knowledge about ilm and fiqh and the basics of Islam. Now that's only one aspect of the spiritual knowledge. The second one is the inner knowledge, the batini knowledge, if you want, and this is the subject, or the mystical knowledge. This is the subject of Sufism, and this is why we get together to do dhikr and to hear talks from various shuyukh and to try to learn about the inner way. Okay, and this is what we do in these meetings when we have our own form of dhikr, which is misal. All of these, or the various dhikrs of Naqshbandi, Shadali, Chistia, they're all designed to generate in us the inner knowledge. Okay. If we do those practices properly, we end up with three commodities that give us access to an amazing amount of knowledge. And these are basira, or inner sight, samia, or the inner hearing, the hearing of the ring of truth, and the opening of the heart, the qalb, and the cleansing of the heart. All these three entities are really the doors of perception into inner reality. And they come from doing the spiritual practices, or from simply from the grace of God, as a ni'mah from God for some people. But most of us have to work at it to get to that level. Now, there is a third form of spiritual knowledge that in general Muslims and Sufis are very weak in. I was pleased to hear yesterday my favorite Sheikh of Ilm, Hamza Yusuf, talking precisely about this issue and saying Muslims need to learn about other religions. You know, many Muslims are too derogatory in their view about other religions. We should learn about it. He was saying that 85% of what they're doing is correct. I wouldn't go that far. But nevertheless, it's to our advantage to understand what the other religions are teaching, what they believe in, what their practices are. And this not only includes, okay, the Muslims are aware that there's Christianity and Judaism, because these are the dhimmi, the people of the other religions, and they're covered in the Quran. But there are other religions that are important in the modern world that aren't really covered to any great extent in the Quran and the Hadith, because the Arabs were not really aware of them. And so that includes Buddhism has become very important. People, Muslims should know about Buddhism, both its positive and its negative aspects. Muslims should know about yoga. It's all around us, everywhere. Hatha yoga, hot yoga, moksha yoga, all around in our cities, there's yoga. We should know something about it. And there are as well the Chinese traditions, Taoism, Confucianism, all of these also have certain essential truths, and we should know about them. For one thing, it's reassuring to see that when the other religions arrive at the same conclusions that we do, you know, then this gives us support. We know that in the scientific community, if you do a study and you've got a finding, it's only considered valid after it's reproduced in other centers of research, right? This is a basic scientific principle in modern science. So it's nice when we have basic values that we can see them being reflected in Christianity, in Judaism, in Buddhism. This reassures us that we're on the right track. Okay, so comparative religion is a very important subject. And I strongly encourage Muslims and Sufis to learn something about it. Hamza Yusuf was saying that he started his religious search in a course at the university in comparative religion, where they studied Houston Smith, who wrote one of the great books of comparative religion called Religions of Man. He just died a few years ago in his 90s, but he was a very great scholar, and I think we can learn a lot from reading his books, plus many others. So that's the spiritual dimension. Okay. Sharia, Hakika, or the inner way, and comparative religion. And each of those is, in the words of Sheikh Nazim, each of those are an ocean of knowledge, an ocean of learning, an ocean of personal development. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, and obviously I have a particular bent in that direction because I was trained as a psychiatrist, but that aside, and I'm critical of psychiatry as well, but we should know if we're living in the modern world, I'm going to say this slowly and deliberately because this is a lesson that Muslims need to learn. Muslims need to learn about psychology. If they don't know anything about psychology, they're not living in the 20th century anymore. There are some problems with psychology. There are many problems with the thinking of Sigmund Freud and Jung and many other people. But there's also some wisdom, both practical and theoretical, in there. And it helps us a lot to understand what's going on, especially in our relationships, especially with other people. So psychology should be, okay, this may sound even heretical, should be a fard al-ayn. Everyone should learn something about psychology. Otherwise, you can't understand what's going on in the modern world. Maybe if you go back to, I don't know, the backwoods, if there are any woods of Egypt or Morocco, you won't need it. But in the modern world, certainly if you're living in the West, you need to have some understanding of psychology. And you can start anywhere. Psychology, generally, we divide it into three, although there's also some scientific psychology. But generally, there's the psychoanalytic school, which was started by Freud. There's cognitive behavioral therapy, which has become very popular, which is started by Aaron Beck. And then there's humanistic psychology, which was actually an outgrowth of the psychoanalytic tradition. And one of the first people involved was Fritz Perls, and they developed gestalt therapy and bioenergetic therapy and primal scream. And there's legitimate knowledge. One of my sheikhs, who will go unnamed here for the reasons that will follow, used to encourage his murids to study philosophy because he said it was more solid than psychology. I think he's completely wrong. Okay, philosophy can be useful, although it gets very complex sometimes and very confusing. But in the modern world, psychology is much more useful than philosophy. I would say philosophy is good to train your brain to think properly, but psychology will teach you about the reality around you. Philosophy is too abstract. So that's religion and psychology. The third dimension that we need to learn about is in the bio of the biopsychosocio-spiritual. And the biological thing we need to learn is not necessarily medicine and zoology and botany. All that is useful. Most people have some teaching in biology and zoology from their high school, from their university. But there's whole new areas that are developing. Specifically, you can look for terms like environmental medicine, holistic medicine, functional medicine. And why is this important? Because they're teaching us about what is going on in the modern world again, and a lot of what is going on that is wrong in the modern world. Okay, so most of the people know about global warming. You know, most people know about developing electric cars and solar panels and windmills to generate electricity, and it stops there. But this knowledge here is considerably more extensive than that. What do I mean? We have to know about what's going on in our food. Now, I know people who are very intelligent and spiritually practicing who are still drinking tap water because some foolish pseudoscientific person on the radio said it's safe. Yeah, it's safe short-term in terms of microbes. So these people are living in the epoch of Pasteur, where the biggest danger was microbes. This is no longer the case. Some people do get sick with infection. But chemicals, pollutants, heavy metals are much more of a problem now than microbes because we have some good antibiotics in general. Yes, there is some antibiotic resistance, but we have very good antibiotics to treat microbes. We don't have anything really solid to treat pesticide intoxications, heavy metal intoxication, electrosmog. It's all around us. They're talking of developing 5G now. You know, these are all serious issues, and they're connected with other things that are undeniable. Cancer, Alzheimer's disease, autism, Parkinsonism, autoimmune disease, all of these are epidemics. Epidemics. My own, to get onto something a little personal, my own mother was dying of cancer in a hospital in Toronto. I saw the internist, who was a very intelligent guy, and I said to him, you know, we have a real problem. Cancer is an epidemic. And he looked at me, and with this kind of confused look on his face, I know what he was doing. He was thinking back to our first or second year teaching of pathology on what an epidemic is and seeing if it corresponded to the equation, to the definition of epidemic. And maybe it doesn't. Who cares? It's all around us. Everyone knows someone either who died of cancer, who has cancer, who's fighting cancer, who's dealing with chemotherapy. It is a proper epidemic all around us. Okay, the same with Alzheimer's. They say if it continues in 20 years, 30 years, 50% of the population is going to have Alzheimer's. Why? Most of these diseases are caused by environmental toxins. And we have every interest, both theoretically and practically, to try to avoid these toxins. That's where the organic agriculture is coming from. And then you get, again, these pseudoscientists bought out by chemical companies and large corporations arguing that it's not dangerous, pesticides. And yet all of these pesticides, when properly tested, are cancerogenic in animals. So you don't think they're cancerogenic in people? But the economic consequences of regulating that have become enormous. So even with the organic movement, most people, especially, a little side note here, I know it concerns some people in our audience, but especially immigrants and second generation immigrants are not aware of these issues. They haven't been exposed to it for long enough. By now in their countries, I saw this in Tunisia, I saw this in Morocco, I saw this in Sri Lanka, the shaitanic chemical chemical companies are selling all these people on the idea that they need pesticides, they need chemical fertilizers, they need herbicides, and so now they're polluting them, and the cancer rate is rising in all of these countries in the East as well as the West. We need to know about this. We need to know about this for our own survival. We need to know about this to understand what's going on in the modern world all around us. And I find often the people who are least aware of this are the new immigrants and sometimes their children. They were worrying about other things. They were just worrying about putting food on your table. You know, for example, this has been a problematic issue for me for a long time. What is halal food? I would say if you use some of the basic Islamic criterion, halal food is actually makruh food. Why? Because according to the ulama, something that is dangerous short-term, acutely, is haram. Something that is dangerous long-term is makruh. That's why some of the ulama say that smoking is haram, others say smoking is makruh. Why makruh? Because it takes a while before you develop lung cancer. Okay. And most of the diseases we're talking about are long-term. So the halal meat, in general, is no better than the regular meat. It fulfills the conditions of our religion, but if you analyze it environmentally, in terms of the hormonal content and the pesticide content and all the rest of it, it's no different from the rest of the meat. So it's actually going to engender illness in the long term. So people who know me know that I buy my meat from mostly from Fahim in, it's called Blossom Pure. I'll give him a little publicity here in Toronto because he does halal organic. He goes to the Mennonites who do agriculture the old way without any of the new chemicals or new tractors and things. And he buys the animals there and he slaughters them halal. So it's halal organic. And it's the best meat you can get possible. But halal, when I hear halal, I'll eat it, of course, occasionally when I'm traveling and I can't get anything else. But I never feel safe with halal meat because it's actually makruh. So this is environmental medicine, holistic medicine, functional medicine. There's I've been watching with my brother tapes and tapes and tapes. There's so much to learn about this, and much of it is very useful and helpful. Most recently, I was listening to a summit on heavy metals. We have a huge problem of heavy metal toxicity in the West. I don't know how it is in the East. Many of us had amalgams. The amalgams had mercury in it. My parents had old water supply systems. There was probably lead in it. Me and my two brothers, we all have high mercury and lead levels. These are problematic long term for all kinds of illness. How do we get rid of it? How did it get there in the first place? How do we avoid it? And there are lots of pitfalls. So when I realized that there was mercury, I went to my dentist, who's a wonderful dentist, and I said to him, he said, it's no problem. I said, I've been reading, it's a problem. I want you to take it. I said, okay, I'll take it out. I said, you don't have to do any precautions? He said, no, we don't have to do anything. The mercury is long since dried out. He took out all my amalgam fillings, and when I did my next hair analysis of mercury level, it was up 3 times. And now I hear in these tapes all these people having trouble. When they try to take out their mercury, it has to be taken out properly. You need special vacuum, you need rubber dam techniques, all of these things. And mercury is a known toxin. Even the regular doctors won't discount that fact. It's a known toxin. But the dentists don't know how dangerous it is, most of them, unless they're holistic dentists. So these are the kind of subjects we need to know about to protect ourselves and to protect our families. We won't go into today because it's a very complex issue, but the whole vaccine question, it's related. The old vaccines had mercury in them. Now they have aluminum instead, and aluminum is a problem. Of course, the illnesses are a problem too. When I went to Saudi Arabia to do Umrah the last time, I read about it. They had a meningitis outbreak a few times during Hajj and Umrah. So I did the meningitis vaccine. But now you have in the United States some protocols where the children are getting 60 plus vaccines before they're 7 years old. This is problematic. You know, and this has to be looked into, but that's a whole other subject. Maybe we will do a talk on that. So this is the biological dimension of knowledge, environmental medicine, we'll call it for now. Now, the one that's come up very strongly in the recent, in the last several years, 10 years, is the sociology aspect. Okay. Just this morning, I was driving in my car, and there was a talk on diversity and multiculturalism on the radio. So people are thinking about this question, and this question of sociology, where do we come from? How are we integrating into the new society? Do we want to integrate into the new society? Sociology is a hugely important subject. And the most important thing of all, perhaps, is us knowing where we come from. In my first book, there's a line that may be shocking to some people, but it says, we are all caricatures of our national origins. Caricatures, not just influenced by. And if you travel around the world, you'll see it. You know, the people in the West, they think they're very independent minded. But if you go traveling, you'll see that in each country, they have a view of some subject that is common amongst all the people. So over 60% of Pakistani people, for example, still don't believe that 9/11 was done by those 19 people that have been named. They still don't believe it. They still have some conspiratorial theory. If you go to the United States, that might be like 8-9%. Okay, so you have huge differences in the way people think about various, that's just one subject, about the subject based on where they're from, based on their sociology. And we come up against this all the time. So probably the most important sociology to know about is where we come from, regardless whether we're from Egypt or Lebanon or Canada or US or France. We should know about our own social group, and we should know, this is the hard part, we should know their strengths and their weaknesses. Most people are mostly aware of the strengths of their social group and not of their weaknesses. Okay, and I'll give you an example. Just happened to me yesterday. There was a lady, probably from the Maghreb, I'm sure, who was raised in France. And she puts a posting on her Facebook page from some literary figure, French figure, I can't even remember his name, but a literary figure talking about God. Okay, mashallah. And she puts it on, look how wonderful he expresses it. And I read this and I respond to her, let's call her Majda, that's not her name, Majda. This man is talking about his concepts of God. People who actually experience God don't speak like that. This is all conceptual. And I say, I'm not surprised, because in France, they deify thinking. The intellect is God, right? The artists and the intellectuals are the most honored people. So they get very confused between what is a concept and what is the reality. And I say, and often Maghrebian people in France, they get taken in by this. Well, she got so angry with me that she blocked me. She couldn't hear it. You see, because she couldn't look at either her own culture or the culture that she was raised in a critical way. We all have to be able to do that, like the Americans. Okay, we always say, all the presidents, politicians, we have the greatest country in the world. America is the greatest country that's ever existed. Have they looked at the facts? You know, all you have to do is take out the last United Nations report from about the social variables that they study in all the countries. Okay, in the developed countries, America ranks last every year in every category, whether it's infant mortality rate of poverty, rate of homicide and crime, longevity, efficiency of the medical system. America, of let's say it's 23, 24 countries, they're always last. The Scandinavian countries are usually at the top, and then they denounce, oh, they're socialists. They're the most successful countries, socially speaking, are Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, 1, 2, 3, 4 in each category. Canada, we do well in most of them, except our medical system is second last. which is a whole other subject. Okay, so again, the Americans are, they have no, well, not only Trump, but many Americans have no critical viewpoint on their own society. They're a failed society, actually, claiming to be the best in the world because they have maybe the best airplanes and the best missiles. I'll give them that. Maybe even, it's not even sure, the best internet technology. That's not even sure. The best military equipment. That's it. And even with all their great military equipment, they couldn't defeat either Afghanistan or Iraq. Two big players military in terms of military equipment, they couldn't defeat either of them. So where is your greatness? It's not there. The point being that we have to be able to look at where we come from and have some critical perspective on our own background. Now, Sheikh Nazim was very good at that. Sheikh Nazim taught me everything, I shouldn't say everything, but a lot of what I know about cultures and nations, because he didn't have this silly liberal attitude, we're all the same. You know, I tell the story in one of my writings about my first trip to Europe. I went with my friend Alan from medical school, and we went first to England. It was very cold and expensive there. Then we went to France and Germany. In 10 days, we did three countries. And I looked at him and I said, Alan, we've been taught a load of crap. He said, what do you mean? I said, we were taught, this is the liberal point of view, that everyone's the same, all countries. These were three white European countries. They were so different one from the other. In Britain, it was cold and it was miserable and everything was expensive. In France, in Germany, you got there, you felt like you were back in the military. Everything was rule-bound and bitter and they want your passport right away and everything is mechanical. These countries were totally different one from the other. They're all white European countries. So imagine the rest of the world. The nations are very different. And Sheikh Nazim was one of the few people who could assimilate that difference without being racist in any way, because he could see the negative and the positive. He would talk about his own people, the Turks, and he would often listen to some Turks talking and say, akıl yok. You know what that means? No, yok is Turkish. Akıl, you know, because it's intellect. He said, these people don't think. And then he would say, but the best military force. The only ones who could break the Chinese lines in the Korean War were the Turks. Oh, yeah. So he said, we have a great skill in organizing and in military, but our people, they don't think enough. Okay. So these are the people the Quran talks to also when it talks to the Quraysh. Think about it. And here we have the opposite problem. People think too much. Our medical system, that's the second last of all the developed countries, they've had so many think tanks and royal commissions and committees and experts studying this, the A Z, as they say in French, from bottom to top, and still no changes. We're overthinking it. And that's more of a Western problem than underthinking. So, in summary, four areas of knowledge that everyone who considers themselves a real Sufi, who wants to have a complete path, must learn: spirituality in its three different forms, psychology, environmental medicine, sociology. Learn about it all. It's all part of reality. And in order to manage this reality properly, you're going to need to understand it and act according to your understanding. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun. We'll allow during the blog, maybe if you have one question, afterwards we can ask 100 questions, but maybe for the sake of the short, if you have, if not, we'll leave it there.
Yeah,
it's okay. Hadi?
No, it's okay.
Okay. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen, Subhana Rabbika, Rabbil Exati, Yachmiyasifu, Salamun Masumim, Bilalameen.